Yeah, ever more popular nightclub at the end of the world. Great time to max out, I guess. This is Mike Rupert. We're on the Lifeboat Hour, and it's Sunday, April 1st, 2012. And oh, dear Lord, how I wish anything that I was telling you tonight was an April Fool's joke. But it's not. As I was talking to Gary before the show opened up tonight, we have left the era of TBTF. You know, we've all seen that, too big to fail, right? And we're going into the era of TBTF, too big to fix. And boy, there's some nasty things happening tonight. And and as we take them together, we're going to have Derek Jensen is with us tonight. He's back with us again. It's one of the best conversations I've ever had on a show. And next week, Dmitry Orlov will be back. I'll tell you more about that during the show tonight. For those of you who don't know, I'm going to have Derek sit and listen while I update you guys on some very, very big news. And I just want to get the acknowledgement that his ears and his mind are going to be hearing this as well. Derek's a very famous author. He writes, he's compulsive. He writes books all the time, and he's written some great ones. He's written Language Older Than Words, The Culture of Make-Believe, and Endgame. And the movie End Civ was based on his work. He was a press action person of the year in 06. And you can find out about Derek Jensen at www.derek.jensen.org. He's a legend in the peak oil collapse, whatever you want to call it, movement, the overall screwed movement. Just recently he wrote a new declaration, which I found was shocking to me in that it reflected almost perfectly the spiritual understandings that I have come to about where we are as a species and what our priorities are, which is first and foremost to reestablish some kind of a healthy relationship with this planet that keeps us alive. Derek, welcome back, man.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, I got some tough briefing I got to do for the audience tonight, I want you to wrap your head around this stuff as we do it. Story published in the Journal of the Environmental Science and Technology that we had on the World News Desk at Collapse, and that Zero Hedge caught it. And Zero Hedge has just been doing great work consistently. But the journal published a study that showed that California. Central and Southern California had been slammed with the greatest amount of radiation from Fukushima outside of Japan. Anaheim, no less, California, this is quoting from the study, has the highest amount of radioactive fallout of any EPA air monitoring station in continental U.S. for iodine-131. Cesium levels in San Francisco area milk are now higher than 6 months ago. USGS says Los Angeles has the highest cesium deposition in the U.S. after Fukushima. Los Angeles. Cesium tends to concentrate lovingly in the testicles. There's an unprecedented spike. 1,501 atoms of radioactive sulfur per cubic meter was detected in California air. 40,000 microsievert thyroid dose for California infants from Fukushima. That's of radioactive iodine. Very, very high doses. And, of course, iodine is very damaging to young children when the thyroid is most active. Abnormal readings of 8 of 18 EPA monitors for California, Oregon, Washington. Devices are now undergoing quality review. Nuclear policy expert stating that radioactive iodine in California rainwater is so far above the level permitted in drinking water. There's a number missing there. I apologize. Uranium-234 has been detected in Hawaii, Southern California, and Seattle. And now also this week, we published two amazing stories about Reactor 2 at Fukushima, one of which said that the radiation levels, two has had a breach of the containment vessel. Much of the fuel splattered on the floor. The water levels are supposed to be something like 30 meters tall, deep, and they're down to about 60 centimeters. but the radiation is now 7, 8 times, 10 times, according to one story, the lethal dose. That's for workers wearing protective suits, and the radiation is so intense that any machines they send in there fail, which has got to be unbelievable amounts of radiation, because that has to affect either the electrical transmission within the machines or the metals, the atomic structure of the metals. Today, we have a story that's up on the homepage of CollapseNet saying that new machines to try and repair, control, whatever you want to call it, have to be designed. In other words, there's nothing on the shelf. It has never been considered. Now, if you look at the fact that Japan is Japanese yen is tanking, Japan is racing towards sovereign default. They're broke. The yen's going to collapse. Their bonds are going to collapse, and that brings the whole economy down with it. Those machines are never even going to get designed, let alone made or used. And once that 60 centimeters of water in reactor 2 goes away, then you have a critical event which dooms all 4 reactors. That sounds like too big to fix. Now, there's another one. We have the Elgin, it's pronounced Elgin platform, in the North Sea, off of Aberdeen, in between Scotland and Norway, that had a blowout. It's a Total rig. And I finally found some numbers. This is a natural gas reservoir 4,000 feet below the seabed, which is about 3,000 feet to 2,500 feet below the surface of the water. Pressures that are unimaginable. And it's venting uncontrolled, and nobody's got a way to fix it. They're talking about drilling another, it'll take 6 months, but in the meantime, 12 million cubic feet per day of natural gas is being vented into the atmosphere. And I tried to put that into perspective, and I did a little research, and according to the U.S. Department of Energy, the world in 2010 used 66 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day. So 12 million cubic feet. Now, this is not what's burned, because when you burn natural gas, you only get water and oxygen or hydrogen. This is like enough natural gas to power Minneapolis for a day is leaking every day into the atmosphere. Now, that may, your mind might try to dismiss that, too big to deal with, but first, it was 6,000 records this week that we caught in a story Monday or Tuesday. But then it turned out later in the week, no, it was 7,000 heat records broken in the United States. The exact total now being somewhere around 7,400 heat records broken this month. Do you think there's a connection? So, in that climate, if you're feeling a little tense in your shoulders, if you're feeling like a little stressed out, it's real okay. We're with a guy I want to talk to this stuff about, because he's someone like me who I'd looked ahead to a certain point and seen that multiple cataclysms like this were going to occur. Derek, is it too late to do anything about anything?
No, I think that we still have plenty of time to get our bets in on the Kansas-Ohio State game tomorrow, right?
Yes, of course, good.
Which is the most important thing. I mean, it's way more important than actually life on the planet or radioactive materials in your testicles. I mean, this is, let's get our priorities straight.
No, okay.
So actually, I have a couple of responses to all this before I actually answer your question.
Okay,
the next response is, I was just doing a talk in Michigan this last week, speaking of records, and the day before I got there, it was 86. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I wanted to say is, all these things you're saying, I keep thinking about a line that someone said after Bhopal. And Bhopal, of course, was... the mass release of bulk toxic chemicals.
Union carbide.
Yeah, Union Carbide killed minimum 8,000 people, but estimates run up to, I don't know, 100, 150,000, but the absolute minimum is 8,000 people. And anyway, after the release of those chemicals, they found that no one had ever bothered to make antidotes for that particular poison. And there's a great quote by an activist who was working in the area, which is so straightforward and I think has to do with everything that you and I both talk about all the time, mm-hmm. which is you should not be allowed to make a poison for which there is no antidote.
Absolutely.
And
that should be sacred, shouldn't it?
Well, it also is something that you should learn when you're about five.
Yes.
That I don't know about you, but I wasn't really allowed to make messes that couldn't be cleaned up. I could certainly make messes. You know, all children make messes. That's what they do. But they make messes that you can clean up. You don't. It's really fundamental, and this is so true on a larger scale. I mean, the thing that made me really want to say this was what you said about they are attempting to design machinery now.
Yeah.
And
it's unfathomable.
That had such consequences, and if it's not something that we didn't see all the time, it would be, laughable, but it's something that we see again and again, that there's this sort of oops thing that then they don't, it's too big to fail, becomes too big to fix, and we haven't come up with any contingencies.
No.
That's, I guess I want to say one more thing before I actually answer your question, which is that I also, this may surprise some people, but in some senses, I do a lot of the work I do because in some ways I'm actually fundamentally pretty conservative. And what I mean by that is I think it's a really bad idea to salmon need to exist for their own sake, and they have a right to exist for their own sake, but I also think it's a really bad idea to foreclose future options by killing them off without thinking about what the consequences of that may be.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true for for building nuclear power plants. I think that I'm just fundamentally conservative in that I don't think that one should build a nuclear power plant unless one has thought carefully through what course of action one is committing oneself to in the future because of one's current actions.
Yeah, I was raised in, my father was a liaison, he was an Air Force veteran, between the Air Force, CIA, and Martin Marietta for the Titan IIIC, and there was a lot of engineering talk around our dinner table. And how things are developed, and for stuff like this equipment, they need to be able to go in just to measure the radiation, let alone work on the place, would require research and development to the tune of tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. Now Japan is sinking right now. Japanese yen is collapsing. Debt to GDP of 235%. So nobody's going to even drop the plan, let alone go through the research, development, and testing. Well, in the meantime, this reactor's going to melt down. There's something even more dumb, stupid, Derek, than just lack of common sense at work here, I think.
Yeah, I think there really is. But I still want to answer your first question.
Okay, go ahead.
Your first question was... basically, is it too late to do anything, or is there anything we can do? And I think there is. And I don't remember if I said this last time, but there was a lot of German resistance to Hitler in World War II, and when the Allies invaded Normandy, a lot of members of the German resistance said that they wanted to that they may as well just quit, you know, hunker down till the end,
mm-hmm.
and one of them, I can't remember his name. He was a big deal on the Eastern Front for this. And anyway, he said, no, we have to go forward because the Nazis are killing 16,000 innocent humans every day. And every day sooner that we can stop the Nazis is 16,000 innocents who are who won't die, and so we need to keep going, even though the war is essentially over.
Mm-hmm.
And so those of us who recognize that the system can't last, I mean, every day sooner that... There's a friend of mine who says that the reason he does the environmental work he does is because as things become increasingly chaotic, he wants to make sure that some doors remain open. And what he means by that is if bull trout still exist in 20 years, they may still exist in 100. But if they're gone in 20, they're gone forever.
Right.
And so I think that actually right now we have a lot more options for what we can do than people did, say, 50 years ago because the system is collapsing. And there's a great line by David Brower, which was, as environmentalists, all of our victories are temporary and all of our losses are permanent. But I think that with the collapse that's happening, we actually have a chance for our victories to become permanent in that if you can protect something now, it may actually be protected forever as opposed to just protected until the next recession is over.
That was a perfect setup. We're coming up on the playing our song for the night. But there is an uprising taking place, and it is, without doubt, the biggest revolution, the biggest power shift, power challenge I have seen in my 61 years, which is that the war to end the dominance, the hegemony of the U.S. dollar has been firmly engaged by the BRICS. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I'm going to give a couple observations. But for the song tonight, I just can't go too many weeks without playing this song, especially on a day like today with the Too Big to Fix stuff. Because we have to allow that there are other forces. Alas, Horatio, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophy. The song tonight is Diane Patterson, a wonderful, wonderful song, High Sierra Morning. Use this to set your compass to true north for the rest of this show. We'll be back in a second.
Let go of the shore and let our fears recede.
That was Diane Patterson, D-I-A-N-N-E, Patterson. Google her. Look her up. I think it's dianepatterson.org.net. I apologize, Diane. She's amazing. I've seen her do this live. She's last heard of in Hawaii, but I expect she might be turning up here in the Sebastopol area pretty soon. I just got a sense of that, where spring is absolutely outrageously happening all over the place. And boy, that gives you a daily fix and a daily promise. Okay, so before the song, we were talking about the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Now, as a journalist, it's interesting to note for me that it was Brazil, Russia, India, and China only until about 3-4 months ago was when I first saw, all of a sudden saw South Africa thrown in there. It's not really an emerging economy. It's been around for a while, but South Africa has been absolutely brutally beaten by energy shortages, gasoline shortages, South Africa has the largest number of gold mines and diamond mines in the world, and it's joined with the other four countries who have declared absolute all-out war to end dollar hegemony, to end the reign of the petrodollar. And Iran is really the spearhead of that. It's standing very tall. It's cutting deals left and right. The whole world is turning on the U.S., just like Gary Nault was saying before this show came on, that people are just abandoning all the major networks because they're nonsense. Well, this is a very important battle. I mean, dollar hegemony since Bretton Woods. That's been the order. That's been the world order. So yeah, a new world order is coming up. But I think the world's had enough. And I'm seeing, and we're going to ask Derek about this. I mean, it's like this long sought for the awakening that we've prayed for has seems to be underway, and there appears to be some serious vehemence in this. Are you feeling it?
That there is a significant awakening?
Yeah, and that it's a little more committed now.
You know, I think that there are a fair number of people who are seeing that this way of life is not compatible with life on Earth, but I am not. Of course, I'm not seeing it reflected on the sort of larger political scale, and I'm also not seeing it so much. I just, like a half hour before I came on, I saw a news article about how some scientists were putting out a call about global warming being so dangerous, and they continue to say the same thing they've been saying, which is that it's really dangerous because global warming could disrupt civilization. And they're still not transferring their loyalty to the real world and
right.
saying it's dangerous because it could actually kill the oceans.
That's a great line. Transferring their loyalty to the real world. I'm going to rip that off from you shamelessly. That's
you
what
do.
This is all about.
And so I'm a bit. I see it some, but I think a lot about the famous Max Planck line about how revolutions of values take place in science, and it's not usually because one group convinces another. It's because the people who believe in one model die off, and the new generation. And so any sort of transition I'm seeing...
We have to go to a break, Derek.
Okay.
Let's pick that up right after the station break here at PRN.FM. You're on the Lifeboat Hour with Mike Rupert and Derek Jensen. We'll be right back after this.
Another long walk, and we've come abreast. Getting dying, sold for lies that we said. Now we can't escape. Another long walk, and we've come abreast.
Dead soldiers, soldiers, but lies that were dead now. We can't escape from. That's We Can't Escape from New White Trash, first song that I ever got a co-writing credit for. I thought it was kind of appropriate title for tonight. We are back on the Lifeboat Hour tonight with Derek Jensen. But before the break, we were talking about very powerful anti-U.S. sentiment that's rising. And I have to add something to my observation about what the BRIC countries are doing with Iran in the war on the dollar. It's an all-out war. And from the financial side, I won't take a lot of time to talk about this tonight. We'll talk about it next week with Dmitry Orlov. But U.S. collapse could happen very, very quickly. And I need to remind everybody that the Berlin Wall came down in 89, and by the end of 91, the Soviet Union had absolutely ceased to exist. And I see something like that very likely possible here in the U.S. With an amazing set of similar and in many cases different playouts on how it's going to work. Dmitry is coming back next week. He won't want to miss that show because I think that that's something we could see happen very, very quickly. And it's part of this awakening at some level or another that Derek and I have been talking about. Derek, we had to cut you off for break. Do you recall where you were? You want to pick up?
Yeah, I was just saying that I would love to be convinced that a lot of people are, to use the language used before, transferring their loyalty to the real world. But, you know, maybe part of it is because I live in such a right-wing county up in Del Norte. You know, the salmon, the coho are getting hammered. And there was just an article in the paper a couple of days ago about how the local board of supervisors is really upset at any possible restrictions that might be put onto lily bulb farmers, even though there's massive pollution from these lily fields that runs off into the Smith River, and they're adamantly opposed to it. So I just, you know, perhaps part of it is because of where I live, but I don't see, I still see people clinging to this economic system as very, very tightly. You know, once again, I would love, every cell in my body wants for me to be wrong on this, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't see it so much.
I'm seeing it more like on the macro level. I'm seeing it very intensely on the macro level.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world has had enough of the United States. I mean, China just literally almost bitch slapped the U.S. with a statement over the weekend, something on the order of the, you know, it's criminal to try to tell people who they can sell their oil, and we're not going to have any part of it. You know
something you were saying a second ago about the U.S. collapse reminds me of a conversation that I've had with one of my sisters, and she's in many ways very right wing, but she's a very interesting right wing because she's not right wing as an excuse for corporate control of everything. She's one of those people who fully believes in local control, and so we kind of come together on that because I'm like so far to the left that I want local control, and she's so far to the right she wants local control. But the point is that.
Which is where it's all going to go anyway.
Yeah,
whether you're
absolutely.
Left or right, that's the way it's going to happen. Yeah, okay.
It has to. But the thing is that it's kind of interesting because both she and I kind of agreed that there's a pretty good chance. When Obama was first elected, we were both sort of made a bet with ourselves that we both thought that he might be the last president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister thought that because she's very right-wing and she thinks he's going to have a coup where he becomes dictator, which I don't think is the case.
He may try it. He ain't going to pull it off if he tries.
Yeah. But I thought that he might be the last one because this might be the end of the U.S. empire, and it might be exactly what you're saying, that the United States collapses like the Soviet Union did.
Yeah, well, that's clearly what I'm seeing emerge. I never thought that I would live to see, Derek, Brazil, Russia, India, China, alone South Africa, and Iran all standing together supporting Iran to sell its oil outside the U.S. dollar. This is a move to break the dollar, to break its back, drive a wooden stake through its heart, rub garlic on it, all that stuff. And there is a. I've been watching the stories very closely, and we have them on CollapseNet for especially for our members on the World News Desk. God, we've just been hitting them out of the park there. The world's had enough of the U.S., and that's going to be, I think, a huge bucket of water into the faces of some smug, complacent people here when they realize that they're living in a whole new world all of a sudden.
So what do you see as the relationship between what you're saying here and the fact that the United States still has a huge military, even if they've been getting their behinds kicked in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, the military is one thing, but the United States was always able, and I, you know, of course I studied this from years of my study of foreign affairs and everything, but the U.S. was kind of like the big bully. Here, you want to do business with us on this way, because if you do, we'll give you this, and if you don't, we're going to do this. But the United States has very little to give anymore. And especially since September the 11th, with every nation in the world knowing that September 11th did not go down the way the U.S. government sold it, people have had it. Nations around the world have just had enough. All they're getting now is stick and no carrot.
Right.
And there's no reason for them to stay with this, and as a result, I mean decades and a good century of resentment is rising to the surface very quickly.
You know, I don't remember if we talked about this last time. I don't think we did, but when I was a kid, I was raised a fundamentalist Christian, and we were very right-wing. I was very right-wing as a kid. When I was 19, I voted for Ronald Reagan, which is the most embarrassing thing I've done in my life.
You're lucky.
What?
You're lucky if that's the most embarrassing.
That's pretty bad. Anyway, it's the most embarrassing political thing. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And anyway, even though I was a little right-winger when I was a kid, even when I was 11 or 12, I recognized that the United States was going about the Vietnam War, presuming even that their goals were okay, which at the time I thought they were. You know, I was 11 years old, whatever. But I recognized even at 10 or 11 years old that they were going about this not only in a way that was really atrocious in terms of atrocities, but also really fundamentally not very smart. And the thing that turned it around for me completely was when I read that the United States was spending, I believe it was about $500,000 per every Vietnamese person that was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in a country with a per capita income of about, let's say, $50 to $100 per year at the time.
Yeah.
And so it became really clear to me that a much smarter, and this is just stick versus carrot in many senses, but a much smarter foreign policy would have been to just hand them piles of money and say, you know, like us.
But that was never the objective anyway.
Right.
The objective was to blow things up, because that's what you have to do. We have a caller. By the way, we're in the last 15 minutes of the show. If you want to call in tonight and ask Derek a question, the number is 1-888-874-4888. We have Paul on Connecticut on the line. Paul, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, fine.
Oh, okay. So I'm calling from Meriden, Connecticut. My question is regarding Ron Paul, regardless of whether I'm for him or against him. Okay, it's kind of a three-part question here. Number one, I see that he's got good stance on civil rights and the Constitution, but it seems to me he's got a poor environmental record, and in this age of collapse where, you know, we need to start living in harmony with the earth, doesn't that concern you?
No.
And then the other part of my question is, it's pretty obvious to me, at least, that the U.S. political system is rigged, and they're just going to put in who they want anyhow, as we've seen in the past and we're seeing now with this Mitt Romney stuff. So how could he even get in? And even if he got in, wouldn't they just, like, dispose of him?
Okay. Well, first of all, let's take the – I have no problem at all with this. Why? Because the Obama administration was elected on the premise of being environmentally friendly, and the EPA is now a seat of resident evil in this country, saying it's okay to have your tap water flammable when it comes out of the tap. And for all the billions and hundreds of millions and tens of thousands of jobs and everything else, the EPA and the current system is utterly corrupt. What Ron Paul wants to do is just shut it down. You know, stop wasting, because these people, the people who you assume conveniently are protecting the environment, are not. They're destroying it. Minerals management, so we can do an hour on that. His environmental policies, don't blame me in the least, because he's going to take the money away, and he's not out to ruin any environment. Who could ruin it worse than it already is? But he's going to shut that stuff down, and that's fine with me, because these people are not friends. They are not doing anything that's helpful, but you buy into an assumption that you have to have some big government bureaucracy protecting the environment. That's all going to stop anyway as civilization collapses. Now, Ron Paul has a great strategy. When it comes time for the Republican convention, what you will see is all the delegates that have been awarded to Romney or whoever, you know, are going to show up, and they're committed for two ballots to vote. What Ron Paul's strategy is to break the commitments to go to a third, fourth ballot, because he knows that after the second ballot, all the delegates pledged to other candidates are free to vote their conscience. And, you know, there is no other choice out there anyway, and Ron Paul is going to kill all this bureaucracy. He's going to remove the federal yokes of bureaucratic power that are strangling the ability of our people to survive, to do anything. He's going to, the IRS, the Fed, all of that. He's going to liberate localities to deal with collapse on a local basis. And he's a principled man. I met him a decade ago when he was in my video, Truth and Lies of 9/11. He is what you see is what you get. He has honor. He has backbone. He's telling the truth, and he's the only guy making any sense. He's got a chance if he can get enough delegates to tie the vote up for the first two ballots at the Republican convention. That's what we're holding our breath for. Derek, I'm sorry, you got anything up?
I think that the important thing to remember is that two things. One is that it's a government of occupation, mm-hmm. and whether Clinton, Bush, Obama, Romney, Paul are in, they're all, none of them are our friends. And I think that that the purpose of all of them is to serve capital. And the other thing is that, I guess there's three things. The second thing is that we have It's not our government, and also that it's I think a lot of the things that we see are basically political theater, and it's like I think the caller said that a lot of it is pretty rigged. I don't mean this in sort of a conspiracy sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has been at some times.
Yeah.
Choice Point, you know, Diebold software, the election to 2000.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right. It can be, but it's like a friend of mine says, you don't have to have a conspiracy when everybody thinks the same. And then the third thing I want to say is that and I think this may be a place that you and I disagree some, because I keep wanting to like Ron Paul because I like his attitudes on U.S. foreign policy. And also some of his other attitudes, like his attitudes on drugs, frankly, are better than a lot of people's.
Right. He's gonna let 2 million black people out of prison.
I think that that's wonderful. I wish that his
nonviolent drug offenders, I should add.
Yeah. I wish that his laissez-faire attitude extended to women, for one thing, and. Also, you know, I'm torn because I agree with you on the EPA that its function is to soak off. Its function is to help is to promote the illusion that something is being done, which that we are somehow being protected.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means that.
No,
Which helps us to not go more openly against the system. So I completely agree with that. And at the same time, I also know that there have been at least some horrible actions that have not happened because of EPA stepping in.
Well, remember that EPA is going, everything is going bankrupt.
Yeah,
let's not kid ourselves that even if it was optimized, the EPA would be doing what it's supposed to, because it ain't going to be there because there isn't enough money.
Well, and there's another part. Yes, I agree. And there's another part of this too, which is as we shouldn't kid ourselves that as peak oil continues its downward slope, that the capitalists in charge will scruple at anything to get every last calorie of energy that they can get.
Yeah, well, okay, now here's where I disagree with you, and then we're going to go talk to John from Connecticut, who's been holding on, is that I don't think Ron, I wouldn't categorize Ron Paul as pro-capital. He may be portrayed that way. I would call Ron Paul pro-freedom. And he's all about giving us back freedoms to move, to do, to react, to respond locally, and plus, even if he was pro-capitalist, he understands. I can guarantee you, he understands the growth is over. John from Connecticut's on the line. John, are you there?
Hello, Mike Rupert.
Hi.
How you doing?
All right.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you two things, but one's a little personal. First question I wanted to ask is, last week you were talking about how collapsed planet would likely go down permanently in the future. You don't really know when, but you're committed to staying on, and I appreciate that.
It'll happen because the grid will go, the electricity will go, or there will be censorship on the net. You know?
Well, what I was wondering is if you could share with us, your listeners, what you do in regards to looking at news and telling what's reliable information and what is half-truths. You know?
Have you been to CollapseNet?
I have.
Okay, so and I don't know if you're a member, but on the World News Desk, that's what our staff does. That's why we are so good. We scan the world 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all kinds of news outlets, all very well sourced. And if you're a journalist, it's very easy to read a story and understand whether you're dealing with someone who has done proper journalism or someone who's blowing smoke. According to this source, it was confirmed by, according to Reuters. I mean, so that tells you at least that what's in the story reaches a certain level of credibility. You can pick out the fly-by-night wannabe journalists because they don't source anything and they don't follow basic journalistic protocol, so you can rely on the story. But beyond that, what we do so well at CollapseNet is we have a very accurate map of the way the world works, and we are able to look at these stories and analyze them. And we bring to our members every day on the World News Desk, I would say, 80 to 100 different stories. And we break them down so that people can trust them. It's not a matter of looking for one reliable news source, as in, well, there aren't any mainstream out there. Go to .com. No, that's not the way you do it. CollapseNet gets this stuff and brings it to you from all around the world, and that's how we make such an accurate map.
I want to respond to that, too.
Okay.
I want to validate what you just said and say that in my own experience, well, one, CollapseNet's really good, and then also that that in my own research, I follow the same thing, that if what I try to do is look at a whole bunch of different sources, by which I mean different sources. It doesn't mean all these same people quoting the same source.
Right.
But try to find a variety of sources to figure out. And then also, so first off, I try to find a variety of sources. And the second thing is that I also try to look at the financial interests of those involved.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great line by Henry Adams 100 and some years ago where he said, "The press is the hired agent of a moneyed system, set up for no other reason than thing is something I try to do a lot, and it's a lot of work. But I'm a nerd, so I really like this. But I follow back sources wherever I can."
You're a lovable nerd.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I follow back. So I'll read something, and they'll have a citation. I'm like, oh, okay. So I go find that source, and then they cite somebody else, and I find that source.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's tremendous fun, and leads me on all sorts of. It's like a treasure hunt. And I find all sorts of things I didn't know before, and I mean, it can take a tremendous amount of time, but it's also a way that I find a lot of good sources.
Well, I think I've been doing this for so many years now that we have developed at CollapseNet a methodology, and We have a Wibia bar on the site, and we see the people coming on from world capitals around the world at the moment we tweet something. We have a methodology that really has proven to be unbelievably accurate in terms of how we gather the stories and how we interpret them. And so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Now, I would also venture to say that if and when the time comes that CollapseNet is no longer here because of grid failure, collapse, or, you know, the FBI has shut us down, or, you know, my car blew up, whenever that happens, I would take that as a signal that you take your eyes away from the world outside and triple the intensity with which you look only at what's going on right around where you live. And I'm looking forward to that time, Derek.
I was going to say that the last two I don't think are such good things, you know, either the FBI shutting you down or you getting blown up. But the first two, that means in many ways that a lot of your work's done.
Yes, exactly.
And then we can get together and play some poker or something.
And I can go out and work in the garden. We've got so much stuff going on. We just planted bamboo today, edible bamboo. You know, and I just look forward to the day when I can get a couple of years out there just living out there, touching that, so I can get away from this computer screen.
Right.
You know, what are you doing now? Are you traveling? Are you speaking? What's going on?
Well, I did some events a couple weeks ago. I did one in Michigan at Eastern Michigan with their education department, and then I did a talk also, which was great. I was very happy. I really liked the people there. And I also did a talk. I was asked to come talk by some Iraq War Veterans for Peace. I'm sorry, Iraq War Veterans Against the War. And Iraq Veterans Against the War, I think it is. Anyway, I love them. They're fabulous. They're they're disciplined, young, dedicated, experienced, smart, and they know political philosophy about 50 times better than I do.
I've met quite a few of them brothers, and I dig them. And you know, it's God, they carry some big weight, you know, for all the shit that happened over there. And
the main ones I was talking to were like 26 or 27.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They seemed like, in a lot of ways, you know, they had their heads on such that I thought they were, you know, I could easily have mistaken them for mid-40s.
We have, you know what? That's absolutely true. We have one more caller in the last couple of minutes of the show here. Marty from upstate New York, are you there?
Yes, good evening, Mike. I just wanted to mention, we're talking about journalism and correspondence, and I wanted you to be aware that Robert Fisk with the London Independent has been a war correspondent in the Middle East for the past 30 years, and on your previous shows, we were talking about the soldiers that did the massacre, and there was a commander in the Middle East that told the soldiers, don't go out and do any revenge stuff, and this story got lost, and you can find it if you go to the London Independent and search Robert Fisk.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that. We're running out of time in the show, so I'm on a time crunch, Marty, but that's good to know, and I am absolutely convinced, Derek, that the Afghan massacre was committed by like two squads, you know, two serials of guys, and that's the massacre that broke the camel's back. That's when I think that's the point at which, certainly in Afghanistan, but all around the world, it was just too much that, regardless of cost, we're out of rational decision making now. Emotionally, everybody's had enough of the U.S. I hope that that's a good. I really think that's a good thing. Go ahead.
Well, I think what would be fun, and we barely touched on this last time we talked, and we barely touched on it tonight, but be fun to talk sometime about how many of the decisions that are made are actually rational.
You know, and as I've been watching U.S. conduct of its foreign, military, economic, and financial policy, there is only one word that I have seen all week: disarray. These guys right now do not, in Washington, Barack Obama, all those guys, the Congress, none of them have a clue. And they're noticeably making things worse, which is now another reason why I think the world might be adopting the position that the U.S. government has to be defeated or come down. And I think the American people should be in exactly the same place, because the U.S. government is killing and lying to us.
Yep.
Just as badly as it's doing to the rest of the world.
Yep.
What do we got to lose? We got 2 minutes. Take the last 2 minutes for yourself, man.
Well, you know, I don't want to really jump into the whole 9/11 thing, but I'm thinking about something that my agent says about 9/11, that what you just said about people, about the United States, people in the United States recognizing, you know, the government is not their friend, that mm-hmm. that what my agent always says about 9/11 is that we don't need to have 9/11 having been an inside job to know that the United States government kills its own citizens and kills citizens all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I'm not meaning to raise 9/11 itself. That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is we could have, I'm sure between the two of us, we could probably in 5 minutes list about 150 times off the top of our heads when the United States has killed its own people.
Yes.
And yet we continue to, and I'm not even talking about the fact that between 4 and 6 people die every day in the United States because they encounter police. I'm talking about larger scale. I'm talking about things like Sand Creek Massacre. I'm talking about the Ludlow Massacre. I'm talking about...
You're talking about Majors Eisenhower and Patton shooting on unemployed, starving World War One veterans in Washington, D.C. with machine guns.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is stuff, I don't know about you, but I was not taught any of this stuff in high school. I had to wait until I read People's History to learn any of this stuff.
Oh, Howard Zinn, God bless him. We are running right down to the last few seconds. Derek Jensen, again, thank you so much for joining us on the Lifeboat Hour tonight. You're going to be back again.
I hope so, soon.
Yeah, and, you know, we're just going to keep trying to get our heads around this and try and find the useful stuff that we can bring to you every week on the Lifeboat Hour. Dmitry Orlov is with us next week, and I love Dmitry. We're old friends, and we're going to talk about the possibility of a really fast collapse of the United States of America. I'm sure you won't want to miss that, and thank you all for making us the number one show behind Gary Null's show on PRN. Big numbers, lots of support. We love you here at the Lifeboat Hour, and we'll see you next week. Good night.